This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 8th of February 2016 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Band. We're starting the week in Milan to take in the local art scene, and fresh off the plane in that fine Italian city is Ossian Ward, no less, head of content at the Listen Gallery, who joins me in the studio. Ossian will be talking us through the latest exhibitions at the recently opened Fondazione Prada, a sonic show by Philippe Pareno at Hangar Bicocca, and some of Canadian artist Rodney Graham's work, which is on show at the Listen Gallery's Milan space. That's all to come on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. And here he is in a flurry of briefcases and personal effects.
Buongiorno.
What's the weather like in Milan, Ossian?
Middle.
Middle? What's that? If I was listening to the radio and someone was like, oh, good, I've been waiting. I didn't want to leave the house before the weather came on. Didn't know what shoes to wear, what coat to wear, whether to wear a tit for or
it's
not.
It's a local phrase, middle.
Mediocre.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's not talk about the weather. That's art speak for... Let's not talk about the weather, Rob. Let's
the
talk
art
about,
weather is hot.
The art weather is hot. Yeah. None more so, perhaps, than that Fondazione Prada, yep. Which is sort of bedded in, isn't it, after it opened last year. Tell us what you think of this space.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. So Rem Koolhaas, who we all love because he's the genius of architecture, has actually done something interesting in that he didn't knock it all down and build something. There is another building that's coming up at the moment called the Tower, which is not finished. But the rest of it are these old factory buildings that he's rejuvenated. So the idea was not to just knock it all down and kind of restore it and rejuvenate it. There is a golden tower as well, which is covered in gold leaf, which is very... striking and quite sort of Italian in that sort of Milan way. It looks very glitzy, but there's something about the spaces that are very generous and the walkways and everything. I think where these star architects tend to fall down is in the actual spaces for the work. So you get into the galleries and you think, oh, it's a bit small in here, or you know,
there's a strange shadow because there's some sort of strange perpendicular ceiling or something.
Yeah, I just think they're the last things that seem to be on their mind, and you know, the wayfinding's quite difficult to know where you are. It's all very sort of it's almost like too cool for school, and all the people have their Fondazione
schoolhouse.
Too cool house.
Are we saying that?
And they've all the you know, museum attendants and the people working there have these very sort of tight little Prada outfits, and slightly, you know, slightly weird. There's the Mad Wes Anderson Cafe, which is quite great.
This is the Barluce.
Barluce, yeah. Luce. And you know, it's based...
I'm literally never going to be allowed back into Italy after today's show.
It's based on one of the ones in the, you know, Wes Anderson Hotel kind of vibe. And that's great. And the best permanent display that of the works they had there was downstairs, where Thomas Demand has made this grotto out of cardboard. So it's a facsimile of a cave, or an imaginary cave, made out of hundreds and hundreds and thousands and millions of bits of stacked cardboard, like layered and, you know, made into this three-dimensional cave. And you go down, you kind of smell the cardboard, and it's quite grotto-esque. So that works. But I think the other set piece is it's about the architecture.
Okay, so it's a museum in search of a show, slightly, is it?
Quite, yeah.
And what about the sort of curatorial element to it? Does it have one curator that oversees all of the things, or do they drop in for each show? Does it have a kind of moving roster of superstar curators? What's the curatorial vibe at Prada? Yeah,
that's a good question. There's someone called Astrid Velter, who's the artistic director. Gemana Chalant does a lot of the shows. You will have seen some of them in Venice as well, the kind of bigger, all-encompassing ones about music and art, or sound and art, or food and art, or, you know, the really big ones are done by Gemana. It'll be interesting to see, because it's a new space. It will kind of have to take on a new look and a new feel. So they had Nick Cullinan as well from the National Portrait Gallery, who did one of the first displays. So it's a rolling program. I've yet to work out, you know, where it's going in terms of that. The show that I saw over the weekend was very nice. It's about recto verso, so it's about images of paintings or things that have been turned around, or that you see the back of the canvas or the stretch, or you see through something. Kind of interesting but inconsequential.
Okay. So it's a bit of a... So I guess all of these places... I guess there is maybe also the intention for it not to actually open with a splash, for it to kind of bed in as a place that you actually genuinely go and see art that just opens, it trundles along. Some things are fantastic. I guess, do you get that feeling, or do you just get that feeling it might have been a slightly missed opportunity this first half year of its life?
No, I mean, I missed the first show, so maybe that was partly about showing the spaces, partly about showing they did something very different with classical sculpture. So using that in the context might have been more interesting, perhaps. But I think, as always, when it comes down to the temporary exhibition spaces, you know, they felt a bit lacking to me. So I'm yet to be convinced. But the feel of the place and the people going there, it's out in the middle of, you know, roughly nowhere on the way to the airport, Linate, in the kind of industrial zone. You know, I think it's a great thing in general. Just we'll see whether the star curators can live up to the star architecture.
Okay, that's Fondazione Prada. There will be something intriguing coming along there. Certainly go and see the building itself. Next, we're going to the hangar Bicocca. Talk us through Hypothesis, Ossian.
So I went to see, you know, Philippe Parreno, who is one of these great French artists, along with Pierre Huyghe, who are making or deconstructing the exhibition, let's say. So you don't get the obvious exhibition experience with their work. You come into the space will be activating, the films will be going off, there's lights. So, you know, this is not your average kind of walkthrough. And I actually went on a night where there was a piano concert, which was by someone who collaborates a lot with Philippe Parreno called Michael Rudy, who's a famous pianist. He gave an amazing rendition of lots of different kind of quite hardcore atonal music, from Cage to Scriabin and, you know, all those guys. And it went on for about an hour and a half. And kind of programmed to go with this are these marquees, which Parreno calls marquees, but they're almost like these lights that you walk under, and the lights are activating above you different shapes, and, you know, almost like you feel like you've arrived once you've gone under them. But these are going off almost in time to the music. So it's quite a visceral experience. You're sort of blown away by the music, but then you've also got the light going with it, and also these lights kind of going around the space and forming all these shadows. And there were 600 people in there, you know.
Wow.
And this Bicocca,
and you walk through this space, which is, you're kind of following the light, so you make your own progress through this sort of accidental sort of it's triggered by where you stand, to a sense.
Yeah, and it's worth talking a bit about the hangar itself, because it's this giant space sponsored by Pirelli. And it's a hangar. I mean, again, I'm sure it was an old industrial building rather than an actual airport hangar. But the kind of shows they can put on there are huge and ambitious. So they have these Anselm Kiefer towers that are there sort of semi-permanently. And lo and behold, just after this show is kind of coming to its climax and coming to an end, Philippe Parreno has now been announced as the next Turbine Hall incumbent.
So it seems like it's a classic Turbine Hall territory.
It's a classic Turbine Hall territory. I mean, in fact, they do share. Andrea Lissoni also works at Tate Modern doing their film program, so there's no coincidence. But these kind of big spaces need someone who can carry that off. So Philippe Parreno obviously can, and will be interesting to see what he does at Tate. He obviously has to do something different.
Yeah, and nice to sort of have a commission like that with someone that whose kind of whole raison d'etre or their MO anyway, if not their RE, is filling a space.
Yeah.
And I suppose a certain amount of tension actually as well, a certain amount of tension between the gallery goer and the gallery itself and what that kind of means.
Yeah, and to make you feel like you're not, you know, sometimes these shows that activate around, you can feel like you're being led somewhere or taken by the hand or forced to do something. But I tend to find them more open than that. You know, some people say, oh, it's all programmed. I hate it. I don't want to be told what to do. But I think Parreno's are much more open, much more lyrical. The films are very kind of wafty. There's one called Marilyn, which is just a Marilyn Monroe-esque voice talking you through this description of her New York apartment. It's very beautiful. And then at the very end, you pan away and you see that actually this whole thing is a set, and these cameras are all, you know, robot cameras moving around the space and it's all been lit and there's people behind there. So you kind of get this reveal and you do feel like there is actual method behind the magic.
Sounds fascinating. I love the idea of that. That is Hypothesis by Philippe Perreno at the Hangar Bicocca in Milan. And it is a Milan-themed show that Ossian Ward, head of content at Listen here in London, is guiding us through. And we're going to end up at Listen, but in Milan. Talk us through Più Arte dello Scovolino. Scovolino.
Very good.
I kind of got there.
Yeah.
Until the Art of Scovolino.
So this is the more art of the pipe cleaner. Is the translation of that. So Rodney Graham is...
No one's going to write it and go, I couldn't believe that you didn't know the Italian for pipe cleaner. Dear Mr. Bound, dear Mr. Ward.
We did have to look it up ourselves, translate it very carefully.
Yeah.
I mean, Rodney comes from Canada. He's very well known there. He's been going for a long time. In fact, he kind of claims that he's done everything. He's done every media. He's done film.
He's a musician as well, isn't he?
He's got his own band. Yeah. He's done a bit of everything, and now what he's doing is almost like trying out some different hats. So we've seen pictures, these grand light boxes of him as a dandy, him as an intellectual. Now he's been a drip painter, and this is him as a pipe cleaner artist, which is a kind of almost a nod to sort of amateur, you know, someone who's just trying out something. But they're based...
It's a bit sort of Blue Peter-y, it seems, in my mind.
Yeah, because I think that's what you would think about when you think about this material, because it's quite sort of homemade and domestic and not very serious. But he's taken the image that he based his kind of... There's this beautiful portrait of him in his studio with all these pipe cleaners, but it's a kind of mid-century 60s idyllic thing on the Amalfi Coast, hence the location in Italy. And he took this actually from an image of an artist called Asger Jorn, who did have a studio out on the coast somewhere and invited all his friends, and they made these beautiful abstract works by the beach. And I think he's sort of trying on this character, but then from that, from the image that you see of him as the pipe cleaner artist, you then go into the show and you see his own works as the pipe cleaner artist, canvases, abstract canvases and sculpture. So he's actually then gone on to make the works, not just pretending.
So there's a bit of set, there's a, as with your last choice, there's a bit of set building. There's a bit of kind of trying to sort of, well, have a conversation about what a gallery is for and what a studio might look like. It's kind of putting the, showing a bit of the back cloth, maybe.
Yeah, and I think he, I mean, that's interesting you use that term, because if you look at the paintings, you can see this kind of very rough Hessian, which he's been banging nails in and sticking stuff through and slicing open. And so the works have obviously been carefully thought out and heavily worked on. They're not just kind of there for show. So the funny thing is he actually can do these works very successfully. But I think he also talks about it as like, oh, you know, I've run out of ideas. I'm a kind of spent person. But, you know, what he's doing is actually proving that he can take on these different mantles, or, you know, some big artists. Let's say in Italy you have Manzoni or Burri, you know, or Fontana or Yves Klein or these guys. And he can actually kind of hack it with those guys, which is interesting. So although he's pretending to be the amateurist, dilettante artist with a kind of hobbyist outlook, he's actually
the work itself
producing some really nice stuff. So,
how much of a risk is it to play that card as an artist? I mean, you know, bands can kind of pretend to do their kind of lo-fi thing and then come back with something very well produced. And comedians deconstruct what it is to be a stand-up comedian to their success, but to sort of like, they don't really pack out houses with it. What's it like in the art world? Do you have to be serious at all times? Can you kind of pull away the curtain a bit?
I think so. I mean, that's what Rodney does very well, is A, not take himself too seriously, and B, actually make things that are funny. And, you know, we look down upon that in the art world. We think that that is the lowest common denominator. But one of my favourite works he ever did was a performance called Lobbing Potatoes at a Gong. So he sat in a chair doing what he said he was going to do. And it was supposedly from, I think, a Pink Floyd quote, like, you know, that someone was lambasting their drummer and saying he was useless. Or, you know, there's a kind of link to a historical moment. But it's very funny, and it's good, and he goes with it, and he sees it through, and he actually does the work at the end of it. So you don't feel like he's just having a kind of laugh and a joke at the at the expense of the viewer. You know, you actually think, wow, he's gone the extra mile. He's gone the extra level. He's actually inhabiting this person. You know, he's channeling them properly.
Sounds fantastic. I love the idea of throwing potatoes at a gong.
Yeah.
In the 90s, when Neil Young made loads of albums that were universally reviewed as five-star product,
you can imagine
someone asked the editor of Q magazine or Uncut magazine here in the UK, if Neil Young pissed in a bucket, they'd give it 5 stars. And the editor actually said, well, I'd have to hear it first. That's what happens when people love you too much. That was Più Arte della Scovolino by Rodney Graham at Listen Gallery in Milan. Before that, we talked about Hypothesis by Philip Pareno at the Hangar Bicocca. And we started at the Fondazione Prada, where Ossian says, the building at the moment, at least, is better than the stuff that's inside it. But make your own mind up. Get on a plane, go to Milan, check all three of those things out. And we should thank Ossian Ward for sitting and being the oracle, as ever, on the Monocle Arts Review. You've been listening to it with me, Robert Bound. The show is produced by Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow when I'll be joined by Baylen Leonard to talk music. But for the time being, thanks for tuning in.